You are listening to the Talking Tough podcast, the world's toughest men and women at their most vulnerable. Their stories of triumph, their falls from grace, and their climb back to the top, to life. This is Rick Bassman here for Talking Tough on the Podcast One Network. Well, hey, everybody. Rick Bassman here for Talking Tough on this incredibly beautiful Wednesday here in the upper reaches, on the upper reaches of Maui. That is just saying on and not in. It's been a hell of a week. The world continues to go crazy. I don't usually talk about that, so I won't say much here. I think our guest might have something to say about that. I'll tell you a little bit about him quickly, and then we'll introduce him in a couple of minutes. His name is John Orlandini, otherwise known as Johnny O. You might be best known for being the most visible and the lead character in the unscripted or reality series Rescue Inc. But he is so much more than that, which you'll find out when we get him live. We all know that I like to talk a lot, and I think today is going to be a special treat for me because John is more than me in a lot of things. One, he likes to talk more than I do, and that's a good thing, John. I know he's in the waiting room, so don't leave us. Don't get mad at me and leave. That's a compliment, and I know you're going to be fascinating to listen to. John also, you know, you guys hear me go on and on about my dogs. My beautiful girl, Gogo, by the way, this week had surgery on Monday. That was scary, but she's doing great now. It was a lot after the passing of Ramon not long ago. She's doing great. Dennis and Eos are great. They'll probably bark during this stream. They always do. So excuse that in advance, please. John is also an expert in the pit bull world and very, very involved in the rescue of that beautiful breed, more so than I am. And that's not something that we find very often. He's also a wild man like me, but maybe even a little wilder. So we have a very extreme man on today with us, a very good dude, a very smart guy, and a guy who's just got a resume a mile long. And let's ask him about it. So without further ado, let me introduce my friend and our guest today, Johnny O.
Hello there.
John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Beautiful, sunny California.
Yeah, you know, it's trippy to me that you're in California, in Ventura, nonetheless, you know, land of the layback surfer dude, when, you know, my impression, at least so many people's impression of you is like the total hyperspeed New Yorker. And how the heck did you end up in, how'd you end up in Surf City, man? What's going on there?
You know, I've been coming to California since I was 20. Not many people knew that. And on and off, part-time, full-time, part-time. I fell in love with California at a young age. My last coming back here a few years ago, I landed into Ventura by accident, actually. And when I came here, because I was looking for a place to stay, and I was working a couple of towns over, and I fell in love with it. Right away, I fell in love with it. And as soon as I saw the downtown and the ocean, I was like, this is where I belong. And it's laid back, like you said, but it, you know, like I said, it's a city with a town feel, and it's like the hidden gem. And it's just beautiful.
Yeah, and I love that. And is that something that you thought you a kind of place you thought you would end up at, or do you miss the big city?
I do miss action. I do miss action. But as you get older, you get a little wiser, they say, and you want more of the laid back feel and less headaches, less traffic. You know, California has heavy traffic.
Yeah,
so
I hear you. Quality of life, brother.
The quality of life, exactly. Exactly.
All right. So, John, every time I do an interview as a subject, and I go on a lot of people's shows and podcasts. I was on two last night, actually, other people's programs. And I always get asked the same questions over and over again. People want to know about the Ultimate Warrior. They want to know about John Cena. I get sick of talking about it, but I feel like I have to. All right. So that said, you are on a reality show. Let's talk about it for a minute and get it out of the way, because I'd imagine this is your John Cena and your Ultimate Warrior. But there was a very successful, very popular reality series called Rescue Inc. You were the central character, one of the central characters on that show. For our audience who may not be familiar with you yet, can you tell us about Rescue Inc. and how that came to be and what you did on that?
Well, I'm going to tell you, you know, I always say my truth may be different than your truth, but I know what the truth is. I'm the original. It was myself and another individual who we never saw. And I was quiet, but as you mentioned earlier, my background is pretty intense in animal welfare. So I could say I was the brains, kind of, the crazy quiet one, I would like to say. But it was a bunch of biker, hot rod type of guys who just cared about animals. And we made a stand. I believe that Rescue Inc., it was called Rescue Inc. Unleashed. We made rescue cool. That's what, because back then, you know, this is years ago, not many men were doing rescue. It was mostly primarily women. So You got a bunch of big guys, you know, tattooed bikes, hot rods, the whole bit. And we just made rescue cool. And it took off. People may notice, you know, the one who really discovered us, I have to say, was Howard Stern. And it was a case in Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan. And he reached out. And from there on, media grabbed us and we just ran from that. So that's the short version. But it was basically going on cases and from dog fighting to missing dogs to abuse, of course, was the main focus, people abusing their animals. And we were just guys who were, you know, maybe sometimes we hit the point in different ways. Sometimes you're hanging from the fifth floor window, you know, to make a point, or you're listening to, you know, do the right thing. So our boots on the ground was pretty intense. And the globe, it was in 160 countries, I believe, something like that. It was crazy. It went global. And it was just something that I'm proud of in a lot of ways and not so much in other ways. That's just me personally.
But, well, what are you not proud of about it?
My surroundings, who I was involved with. I'm the real deal. You know that. I know that. I've been doing rescue since I was 10 years old. Never thought it'd be my full-time career, but that's me personally. I was a former humane commissioner. I was ASPCA, search and rescue, first responder. I was executive director, shelter reform, all those things. I educated myself with that, and I brought that to Rescue Inc. They used to call me a half a cop because I was a humane commissioner. So I was like the buffer between law enforcement and us. If we crossed the line, I would go talk to law enforcement because I was the humane commissioner, you know? So a little more respect, I guess. And they were shocked because here I am with all these tattoos, earrings, you know, tall, big muscle guy. And then I'm like, you're the humane commissioner? Yeah. And I'm, you know, showing my badge. And so that was, you know, so we got a lot done because of that, because we kind of cut a lot of red tape for that. But there was things that a lot of disagreements in the organization, a lot of dislike in the organization, you know, things that just kind of dissolve, you know, just break apart and go your different ways. And I was the first one to leave. I left and that was it. And I never looked back.
So did the producers like cast people on the show that should not have been on the show? Was that part of the problem?
No, it was all us. We were us. Yeah, we were the guys. Nobody was casted in there.
All right. I was wondering.
The original members, and I even have the original pictures, was myself and a guy named Mike Tattoo. And then Mike disappeared for whatever. I'm not going to get into that part of the New York thing. But and then the other guys came along. And then the original, then the founders were three or four of us, technically. And then after that, we placed pieces in. You know, some guys stopped doing it. Some guys came in. And that was it. But it was great at the time because it was nothing like it. So it was very original, I like to say, you know. And we got a lot done. We got a lot accomplished.
Do you think there could be could something like that be resurrected? Would that be interesting for television these days? Is there anything original that hasn't been done yet?
There was another organization who tried it in Philly. They didn't really go anywhere. And it's funny because one of the guys who started that was a volunteer for us. So they were basically copycats. And there are other copycats also. But again, you know, you can't replace me. You understand? I can't replace you and your background or what you've done. You know, you are who you are. So good luck trying to replace.
I think I'm going to need you for my show, though. Did I ever tell you what my rescue idea is for a show?
No. Okay. No, not at all.
So picture this. We get, say, you and me, maybe Jason Flatt, maybe Shorty, and a couple of buddies of mine that are big, scary motherfuckers that happen to have a huge heart for pit bulls. And the episode opens. We're sitting around a computer, and we look at one of those horrible stories you see on Facebook about something awful someone's done to one of our beloved bully breeds, right? And we talk about it. We talk about why it's wrong. We talk about how they should treat the animal, how they should treat their fellow human being. And then we get in the car. Then the next segment is like a travel log. We cruise across the country. We eat some good food. We have some fun on our way to the destination. You come back from commercial. Then you know what happens next? Then there's a kidnap segment where we grab the guy. And the end of the show is we just do to him what he did to the dog. Wouldn't that be a great show?
That'd be an awesome show. Like I told you, I see everything. I know nothing. You know that.
I'm right there with you, brother. Yeah. See, even in today's crazy, divisive, everything television society, we probably couldn't get away with that one. But I don't. It warms my heart to think of it. In any case, so
absolutely,
it's all good. What are you doing in California, man? What's exciting in the life of Johnny O?
I was working as a contracted director of operations. I was doing a shelter reform thing with one of the shelters. Mm. Because years ago, I used to do high kill shelters into no kill. And it's not hard to do. And I tell people this, there's no such thing as a no kill shelter. Technically, there is no such thing.
Well, sure, Doc. Dogs are put down for humanitarian reasons.
Yeah,
illnesses
or things like that. And but you try to get as close as you can in adopting them out, finding that forever home. And so that's what I was doing out here in California. And I decided just to open up a consulting firm, which I did in Nevada, on things that are very close and dear to me. Animal welfare being one of them, but also mental health. Addiction, veganism, because I'm vegan for a very long time, things like that, and trying to help others. My calling basically is helping others. And I always say animals are always on the bottom of the list. So we have to raise that up, that platform up. And
not on the bottom of your list, of course, on the bottom of society's list you're talking
right,
about.
Correct. Number one on my list, but on the bottom of society's list. Yes.
Just want to clarify that, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's what I'm doing now. And then, of course, TV interest and things of that nature. So, but everything was on hold, obviously, because of the virus. So hopefully we'll start getting that rolling again. But I never stop. I still investigate cases. I still get constantly getting emails for help every day, messaging on Facebook or personal emails. So I'm always trying to help, because one of the things that I'm really good at is keeping relationships with the right people. Mm-hmm. And you never burn your bridges. And no matter if you're right or wrong, I'll be the first one to admit if I'm wrong. And I have contacts, like I'm sure you do, globally, Europe, Australia, Mexico, wherever, wherever there, because there's animal lovers everywhere. There's humanitarians everywhere. It's just clouded by all the hoo-ha that goes out there. The hate, clouds it up, but there's so much good out there. And as long as you keep your contacts, I always say you don't have to save 100 lives, but if you save one life, you did your job. So you can't do everything.
You preach to the choir, my friend. I love that. So you have a lot of people reaching out to you. You have a lot of contacts that exist for many years or decades. Do you ever reach out to people you don't know to offer help?
Yes, absolutely.
How do you do that? What does that look like?
Well, what I do, which a lot of people probably don't want to do, is I have multiple social media pages, and I have eight total in all different platforms. And I keep my notification on all the time. So my phone's constantly beeping with likes and dislikes and comments and everything else. So I'll feed through it through my iPhone. And as I'm feeding it, I might see something that caught my eye. I may not know the person, but I'm kind of watching what they're doing. So I put a little note next to my thing where, let's say they're in Ames, Iowa, you know, and then all of a sudden I find out there's something not too far from there. I'll message them because we may be friends on social media, but I don't personally know you. So I would just send a message and like a hit or miss and see if it works. And a lot of times they come right back to me because they've been following me for God knows how long. And then I ask them about the situation, and that's how it starts. And then if they can't do it, they might know somebody who can. And then it just kind of goes from there. And you hope that you're hitting the right dots every time you do that. And that, it doesn't work all the time, but a lot of times it does. And that's how I build relationships. Now I start a new relationship with that person. And then we just keep on going and going and going. And I just started talking to somebody in Austin, Texas. I didn't even know did a fundraiser for RI back in the day. She did a fundraiser for us in Austin, Texas. And I'm like, that was you? And here she is, because I couldn't put the face and the name together. And so sure. So now her and I are very vocal with a lot of things. And now I rekindled a relationship. So that's awesome. Yeah, so that's how it usually goes.
And the people you're helping, they're not always necessarily professional clients. Sometimes you're helping just because somebody needs it.
I'm the most famous poor person you ever want to meet, Rick.
No, dude. Right, once again. Right there.
Yeah, I don't put a price tag on it.
Anyone who's watching this now or will watch it later on replay, whether it be on Talking Tough or Hannibal TV or whatever, please remember this one moment. There's so much selfishness out there now. There's also so much good. I'm with you, man. And you know, I spend as much of my time on sites like the Good News Network as I do on CNN, where it's just all ugliness, or Fox News, where it's all ugliness. And I want people to remember that, and John, I believe you'll support me here, that we have a choice every day, every hour, and every minute of every hour to be helpful to another person or to be hurtful. And I love the fact that you are always choosing the former. So good on you, man. There's not a question on that. Just a statement. And I think that's great.
Well, that's the humanitarian side of me also that I give credit to my parents. They're still alive at 93. And my mom still works out 4 days a week. And so we all have our struggles with our upbringing and we fight our demons and whatever. But at the end of the day, they taught me well. And I still communicate with my mom all the time. And one of the things I've learned from them was about giving back. And it doesn't have to be big. It could be, I work with the homeless. I try to work with the homeless. And when I started seeing the racial thing going out of whack, you know, I said, I saw a homeless man. I gave him some money, not a lot. I bought him lunch. Oh, I forgot to tell you, he was a man of color. You know, like, I don't care. I'm colorblind. I don't care. He was a homeless man. You understand? And I've seen him over and over and over, and I helped him out. But that's me. If I have my last dollar, I'll give it to you. If I have my, you know, I'll take the shirt off my back. But that's who I am. And I've learned that through mistakes. I've learned that through failure. I've learned that through other things. And that's where it brought me to where I am now. And I don't lose sleep over it. You know, I sleep well.
Okay, good. Got some questions for you based on on this discussion point. So your parents are alive. You have a good relationship with them. Sounds like you had a good, solid upbringing. You know, John, I saw there's a woman I've been trying to get on the show as a guest. And she has a project where she goes into prisons and she gets all these hardened felons in this giant circle around her in the yard. And there are people of every race and creed and nationality imaginable. And she asks them questions. And if the answer to that question is a yes, they all step in another step into the circle. The idea is to get everybody together at the end. It's pretty freaking amazing. The first question she always asks is, who here is from a broken home? And everybody steps in. Now, John, I came from a really good upbringing. So the time I was 13, my mom dropped dead very suddenly when I was 13. But up until that, good mom, good dad, good upbringing, no abuse, none of that. I went awry later in life for sure, but I can't blame it on an upbringing. You mentioned you've had your challenges. Mm-hmm. What were they and how did they happen? You don't come from a broken home. You weren't abused as a child. So
no. let's back up a little bit. A little bit on that. I was abused. I'm not going to get into it personally, but I was as a child. I'm still here, so it wasn't severe to where you're going to put a gun to your head. But it took a long time to recognize that. There's different types of abuse. There's physical, there's mentally, there's emotional, there's bullying, there's many differences. You know, I'm not going to get into details, but as that. Yes, my parents, I was a gifted athlete, and my father played college basketball as well. So they're both educators. And I was just very, that it was more, I'm not going to say it was leave it to Beaver with the picket fence and the two kids. You know, I'm the youngest out of four, but as you and I have discussed in the past, I'm in sobriety 30 years from drugs and alcohol, and that was pretty bad. Once an addict, always an addict, and you remind yourself every day. So for me, I always said, well, how did I get started? And I was very young when I did. And the thing about it is that, and I was abusing myself with that, is we all are addicts. We all have it in our DNA. When I say you're an addict, I'm like, I don't do drugs. I didn't say drugs. You're addicted. You have an addictive personality. It's in our DNA. You know, there's something, okay? So, yeah. So my upbringing, I say I don't blame my parents for my stupidity, but part of it is that. Part of it is rebellions. Part of it is hanging out with the wrong crowd. Part of it is just life in general. In the times I grew up in the 70s and 80s, you know, and I was born in the mid 60s. So for me, it was also the time, and you learn. And thank God, I mean, I relapsed twice, and then now it's been 30 years. So for me, nobody has a perfect upbringing. Nobody does. If they tell you they did, they're lying. And there's always something. If it's a great upbringing in a household, like a clean household, or if it's a rough household, there's always issues in that household.
All right.
So for me, my upbringing overall, I think was good. It was good, but a lot of bumps and demons that you got to deal with, and that's part of life. And again, I'm one of the fortunate ones, you know. But I recognized it later in life, and I didn't. At the moment, you don't know about it until later. It's called maturity.
So let me ask you the question this way then.
Sure.
You've been sober for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go through the program?
I originally started with AA.
And that wasn't the question. Didn't want to get too deep in the program talk.
No.
Did the whole AA thing. Okay.
No, I started with it, but I didn't do it.
All right. But you've been in the rooms, and people tell their stories and whatnot. When I look at you now, when I hear you now, I just see a guy who's confident yet humble, who is in control of his life and control of his destiny. Mm-hmm. A lot of people aren't like that now. A lot of people are solid and are not solid and want to be what you are. Right. So can you tell us, not just me, but everybody out there, that you understand what they're feeling by maybe sharing what your rock bottom was, if you don't mind?
Oh boy. Like
what depth did you fall to? I would love to hear.
Oh boy. I almost died multiple times. One of them, I'll tell you one, I was in a car. I remember it was a Dodge Colt. I'll never forget it. It was brand new. It's a little car, and I was high as a kite. I was probably early 20s, and I was at a light, and as an idiot and not, you know, intact, I decided to make a U-turn, and boom, I got slammed. And illegal what I did. It was just totally illegal, but I was so wasted, and I almost died. The car was actually a horseshoe, and they told me that if it didn't hit the hinges of the door, but it hit the middle of the door, I would have been dead. I would have been crushed. But it hit the hinges of the door, which saved me. That was a wake-up call. driving so drunk and not knowing how I got home. Mm-hmm. Driving so high, never waking up and having filth all over me and don't know how I did it. I mean, these are things that people, I'm sure, could relate to that. But hitting rock bottom is not hitting rock bottom to me is not having control of your life.
Okay.
So what I mean by that is that when you're high or drunk, you can't smell, you can't see, you can't hear, you can't talk straight. But once you become sober, you can smell, you can hear, you can see, and you can see your surroundings, control your surroundings. It's a whole different feeling, okay? So when you're in that cloud of addiction, if you make it through it, it's the grace of God, because you can't see, you can't focus, you can't see anything. You can't.
Well, it's a good start, granted, but I'll submit that you are who you are because you're an evolved human being. This is a compliment, not solely because you quit drinking and doing drugs, obviously. You know, as they say in the rooms, if you remember, alcohol and drugs are but a symptom of the larger problem. So, yes, you can remove
It's called self-medication.
Yes. And so you remove the medication, but then what? I mean, there are plenty of what we know as dry drunks or dry addicts out there that don't drink anymore, don't do drugs anymore, but are just miserable, depressed human beings. So
their dependence was on the drugs or the drinking. So they could have been, you know, more social. They could have been more lively, more, maybe even sharper in some ways. I'm not talking about driving. I'm talking about just at home or something. But once that was taken away because they realized it was an addiction, now all of a sudden their dependency was gone, and they didn't challenge themselves to find something new, to find something that's just as good and it's more healthy and more alive, you know. And that's why I try to help people in addiction, is that you have to find a balance. You have to find what you're good at. Besides, you know, once you got rid of that toxic poison, now you got, because a lot of people do is, first of all, people who become sober relapse within a year. It's automatic. Boom, they go back. Okay.
Oh, 80% plus. Yep.
Right. But then I get the other ones who go from sobriety all the way to the other side. So now they're addicting to drinking green grass and exercising 20 times a day. And that you're still doing the same thing. You're hurting yourself because you went from one extreme to the other. You got to find that middle ground, And that's baby steps. That takes time. And that's part of, you know, people always, you know, the big epidemic we have is with heroin, and out here is crystal meth and everything else. But the real big addiction is cigarettes, is nicotine. Mm-hmm. Nicotine is more addicting than heroin, and people have a hard time understanding that, because it's legal to smoke, but it's not legal to take heroin. But that was the whole purpose of doing that. It's all about this, the evil dollar. But cigarettes are more addicting. So when someone becomes sober, right away they start smoking, they start drinking their coffee, blah blah blah. But I always say one addiction at a time. And I was a two packer. I was a two packer a day also. So you have
to. You are now, or you were?
No. I said when I was.
You were
like craziness. I was also doing that.
You don't smoke now.
I haven't smoked in 30 years. I'm saying when I gave it up, I gave it up, you know.
Right,
and I've been vegan 30 years. Well, vegetarian 10 and vegan 20. But that helped me. And then, as you're very familiar with, martial arts also helped me too. So, because I was in that for a long time. And I didn't do martial arts to beat up people. I did it to help my soul, my you know, cleansing, you know, my discipline, I guess. So that's really, for me, that was very important.
All right, good. Now that puts some perspective with it. Thank you very much. I'm going to do something really funny. I'm going to embarrass myself, but not you.
Okay.
I am not a friend of technology, and I am trying to learn as we go along here. My producer, you met him, his name is John Pozorowski, a fellow John, a fellow Easterner, just like yourself. He is hiding in the off screen right now. John, can you join us for a second? I need to ask you a question. He'll come on in a second. I'm gonna ask you your impression of Johnny O in a moment for a reason. First, I want to ask you this though. You're sending me a note while we're on, and I'm gonna expose my technology to everybody out there right now. Johnny O, John P is messaging me saying, make your streams public to see comments. What do I need to do, John? Because I'm not going to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time here. So with everybody watching or listening, I'm going to ask you what to do.
So it says you'd have to go into your Facebook. I wouldn't do it now. I mean, but you'd have to go into your Facebook.
You're telling me to do it now.
No, okay. I don't think you'll be able to, because you have to go into your Facebook. But there's a thing on there where it's public. I think it might, you might not be set to public.
Okay. Okay. So are we not seeing comments? Is that what's happening?
Not on StreamYard. No.
Very good. Okay. Thank you. John, yes. while you're on,
yes.
What do you think of Johnny O, man? What's your impression?
I love it. He kind of looks like you when you have the glasses on. Okay. You know, you got the same look, but I love his attitude.
All right.
You know, very straightforward. No bullshit. You know, straightforward mm-hmm. guy. I love that.
Dude, I'm going to ask him a question. I asked him my next two questions. You're not going to believe that I'm going to ask these because I always avoid these two topics like the plague. But I'm going to ask Johnny O, are you a religious person?
I am a spiritual person, and we could talk about that all day if you want, because I could really open a lot of people's eyes with that. I was, if you allow me, I'll explain. I was raised a Roman Catholic, you know, McGinney from New York. Mm-hmm. My mom's very religious, Eucharist minister, ran the prayer group for 50 some odd years. My dad as well, you know, religious, you know, he used to, you know, do the Eucharist thing and all that. I left the Catholic Church many, many moons ago. I started following the Buddhism teachings. It's all about kindness and meditation. Simple. It's not a religion, but I believe in a higher power in the spirituality sense. Religion is just a corporation. That's all it is. It's one that, if you want to hide, the best place to hide is behind religion. It's the dirtiest place on earth. I'm going to tell you a quick, real quick story. My ex-mother-in-law, who passed away many, many moons ago, my ex-wife is from Vancouver, BC. And what was that?
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and she
that was
going
to appear on my end.
Oh, she was a survivor in the Holocaust. She was a very young child, 4, 5, 6, something like that. And she saw half her family get killed, literally her German family get killed. And she told me, I got married very young, as you know, and I was in probably my 20s when I was up there talking to her. And she said to me, which I never forgot, and she says, you don't have to be a Christian to be a good person. And we're so conditioned and programmed to be a certain way. And that's what the problem is. Everybody's afraid of breaking from certain things that we were brought up with. It's all fake. It's all lies. It's all fake and lies. Okay. And it's been proven over and over and over again. So spirituality, if you hold on to that, believe in a higher power, you'll be okay. You know, if you do good to others, you will be okay. If you take care of an animal, which is God's children, you will be okay. And that's how it's simple. It's so simple. You don't have to get complicated with this.
So freaking simple. And you know what? Again, I don't know how many times I'm going to say this during this conversation, but again, my friend, you are preaching to the choir. You know, I grew up Jewish, and then I went to Catholic school, and then I thought I converted to Buddhism. So, you know, how confused am I, right?
Right.
But I'm with you. I did not invite or welcome a higher power into my life until like about 3 years ago, man. I started late, and it has brought me an enormous amount of peace over these past 3 years. And I live my life by the same maxim that you're espousing right now, which is just be nice to other people, man. Do service. And it's amazing how it can come back to you. And, you know, I have a lot of friends that are very Orthodox in Judaism. I have some friends who are very religious Christians. We did a interview last week with Sting, the pro wrestler, and my good friend Darren McVie, who's Malibu from the American Gladiators. And they're both very, very Christian. And, you know, we've gotten to some pretty healthy debates about it. But at the end of the day, they respect my opinion. I respect theirs. And we just show each other love and tolerance and understanding. And, you know, to me, that's the religion of the world. Be that way to other people. Things are going to be better for everybody.
Yeah. Now, let me tap on the Christian thing. If somebody is a Christian or they claim to be a Christian and doing good things, that's okay. That's fine. If you feel good, if you're comfortable with that, if that's your blanket and you're comfortable with that, that's okay.
Absolutely.
You know, but don't throw it down other people's throats. Don't force it on. It's like me. Listen, I'm vegan forever, and I can't stand most of the vegans. You know why? Because they're so extreme that if you're not a vegan, you're a ba 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 ba. That's not what vegan's about. Okay. It's not, that's what it's about. So you can't judge people for what they believe in. As long as they're good people, if they're good human beings, that's all that matters. That's it.
And this is the big problem. I hate to even say that word problem, challenge that I have with the world right now. I spend admittedly way too much time on social media. Now, a lot of it, the vast majority is for my work. That's my excuse, and it's true for the most part. But I see so much of what is being written out there by people that are longtime friends of mine, and it's just hateful. Now here's the second thing that I'm going into that my producer won't believe I'm bringing up, which is politics, because we also avoid that like the plague here on Talking Tough. And I will always say that neither you nor John, who I talk with every day, will know where I am, what side of the aisle I'm on. Not that you would care or anybody else would care, but you don't know, because I choose not to let people know that. Not because I'm apathetic or apolitical or because I don't care, but because the mode these days seems to be, here's my position. Let me tell you exactly how it is. So everyone's suddenly a political expert too, if you haven't noticed that. And you obviously get the sarcasm I'm saying that with. And if you don't agree with my expertise, then fuck you. And then it gets mean. And dude, it's just like, what do we do about that? What would you tell people who are getting ready to type out that next hateful message, man?
Bring it on. Because the more haters you have, the more popular you become. And makes a curiosity for others. And I don't get a lot of hate, but I have my political views, and I kept my mouth shut for a long time. But people who react right away are exposing themselves. In other words, they are, again, I use the word condition and program. This is what it is. No matter how bad they're supporting that individual, this is what they don't do their homework, is what I'm saying. You have to see, as I'm talking to you, my phone's going off like crazy of videos I'm getting from things that make a Billy Goat puke. Okay, so there are things that I know in the political world that I don't want to know. You know, remember I told you I'm Italian, I pleaded the hoo-ha-ha, you know, that's back, right, whatever. Yeah. Okay, I'm very loyal. So for me, I see that. So as soon as you support something, right away, if you don't, like, it's like this. Vegans, a lot of vegans are atheists. Okay, a lot of vegans are atheists for whatever reason. There are other vegans that are Christians, and then there are vegans like me. Okay, so am I hating a person as an atheist? Am I hating a person that's a Christian? So if I have a political, when politics, you know, like you said, you don't want to get involved with politics, but when you touch that word politics right away.
I brought it up, man. It's my fault.
No, I know. I'm saying, what do you call it? Clusterfuck, right? All of a sudden becomes clusterfuck. Mm-hmm. And people don't get it. I say this. So many in our world live in a bubble. You know what happens with bubbles, right? They eventually
pop. They get burst, buddy. Yep.
Right. And when they pop, what are you going to do? You're going to fall into a spider web. And now you're caught in the spider web. Unless that spider web is cut before that spider comes, you're dead. Okay, so you have to think outside the box. You have to look. I tell people, don't just look at that beautiful picture frame in the picture. You got to look at the picture. The frame looks beautiful, but look at the picture. There's a big story behind that picture. So you have to really do your homework and understand. That's why I always say I'm a registered independent, because there were times in the past I went this way. There were times in the past I went that way. It's just a matter of where we are now. We've been blinded for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So I try to explain to people, listen, what was the last time you rescued a dog? What was the last time you rescued a horse? What was the last time you rescued a pig? My friend just rescued another pig the other day. Okay. She has a little 5 acres in Ojai. So I'm like, when did you do that? Oh, I just do cross posting on Facebook. Oh, you do cross? Then shut the fuck up already, man. Okay. Asshole. You know, so you want to take the New York out of me? Okay, we'll do that. I could talk to you like I'm a professor from NYU. I could talk to you like I'm the guinea from New York. Pick your choice. Don't act like an ass. Okay. So you have to understand, like I tell people, I may do boots on the ground at times. I may do this at times. I may do this at times. Anybody could do something in rescue. You don't have to be the guy on the boots on the ground. You don't have, you could be the person doing the laundry at the shelter as a volunteer thank you for cleaning those blankets because the dogs don't deserve to sleep on shit. Okay. So they're just as important as the person that's doing the boots on the ground. I believe.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. Hey, John, and on that, you're right. Anybody, everybody can participate. And I noticed that John, our producer, has been putting comments up on the screen as we're talking here. Two that I saw come up were from Gigi Hart, who's a very close friend of mine, and from Cap Caliendo, two lovely ladies who have huge hearts for rescue. So maybe, John, you could say hi to Gigi and Cap for a second.
Hello there. Hello there, Gigi and Cat. How are you? Peace on, baby. Love what you're doing.
They do great stuff, man. John, so how old are you now? Do you advertise?
Me personally, I'm 56.
50. Okay, we're pretty close here, man. And you know, at this late stage in life, I definitely have goals. I mean, I still intend to have the world's largest pit bull rescue. Not so I can brag to have the world's largest, because I want to live with that. That's all.
Yeah, I think you and I spoke about that like 2 years ago.
That's my end of life goal for sure.
Right.
What do you want to do, man? What's the big goal for you still? What haven't you done that you want to do?
I'm looking at 25 acres actually, in the, who knows, but I want to do a very different sanctuary, and the sanctuary I want to do is more like a community, and it's rescue animals, not to where it's like a hoarder situation, you know, you're very selective, but animals in general, not just dogs, but you know, everything, within reason. I want to have a program set up and a sleeping areas for domestic violence, the veterans of the homeless, you know, things that are important to me. I have them to have a safe haven. And in return, I have these little tiny homes or trailers, like nice trailers, you know, those, you know, fifth wheels or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you have it kind of scattered a little bit. And all you have to do in return is take care of the animals. And you can stay here as long as you need to. You know, and try to get you into and build the programs up and bring people in to help them out, and then bring maybe a vegan chef in and do some cooking and show them things. And it's just more about a community. It's not about overkilling, but it's about a community. And yeah, I think that's my main mission, is to do that if I ever do it, God willing. But it's more than just because rescue to me is not just about animals, even though that's my number one thing, but it's also about children, the elderly. I still carry my New York State license as a CPCT because I was an athletic trainer, you know, wound care, sterilization. That was my main job. And so I believe in really helping others, because if you help them and they recover from whatever their situation is, they'll help somebody else. And then that person will help somebody else. And that's how you have to start the chain. And that's the God's honest truth. That's what you have to do. So if I could have something like that, so you have, let's say I have 50 dogs. Seniors are very important to me. Senior dogs, senior cats, you know, senior animals in general. But having that, their freedom. You know, and then the therapy that comes with that, you know, people go to therapists or psychiatrists, whatever. A therapist, the best therapists are animals, man. Point down, you know, if you see that homeless man, a veteran especially, and he's having a relationship in energy with, let's say, a horse that I have on my sanctuary, or a couple of these dogs, or he's in charge of taking care of the senior dogs, you know. You visually see that I did my job, you know, that's what I was looking for. So, and same with domestic women. I didn't realize how bad domestic violence was until I started getting phone calls about taking the animal from the situation, because the person's like, I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to kill that dog, you know? And then you realize that I didn't realize how bad it was.
It goes hand in hand, man. I've seen so many.
Of course. I'm not a violent guy. You're not a violent guy. But listen, I don't look for a fight, but I'm always ready for one. I'm not here to fight you. But at the same time, if you want to go, we'll go, man. I might get hurt, but I promise you're going to get hurt worse. Okay. So it's really.
So, John, are you. Go on. Sorry.
No. But that's what I'm looking to do. Is that's my dream, is to have a sanctuary. But everything.
I love that vision. Man, I really do. That's a beautiful vision. When I'm old and decrepit, which will probably be like tomorrow, can I uh, Can I come live on your property as long as I promise to help?
Sure. The property I'm looking at is not too far where you're from. So, you know, it's down south there, you know?
All right. I need to retain my, my executive title though. I told you what that is, right? In the world of rescue.
Yes.
You know, you have CEOs, you have COOs, right? I'm CPS. That stands for Chief Pooper Scooper. That's my rescue title, man.
Beautiful. Love it. We'll even have a personal truck for you.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you. Okay. So you and I both know, you know, it's great going on Facebook and seeing all the people in rescue. And you're talking about cross posters. So most are cross posters. And then of all these rescues out there, you and I both know that 99% plus are what we call foster-based rescues. It's a place that, you know, it's a person or two people that have gone to the degree of, you know, getting their nonprofit status, which is not easy. So I give them props for that. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, they're fostering a dog or two or five, and they're trying to get them adopted out. That small remaining percentage, which is probably a tiny fraction of 1%, are people that have invested in land, the kind of things we're talking about doing, that have truly made this their entire life's mission. I have a lot of good friends that, you know, like Linda Blair, who we talked about earlier.
Right. Oh, yeah. Linda's first.
A friend of yours. Who in that world do you stay in touch with and admire?
Jason, for one. Jason Flat.
Well, then let's call them out so people listening to this can
Jason Flat is the largest pit bull rescue in the country. No, hands down. Before he even had maybe a few months ago, he bought the land, you know, the 14 acres, but he had over 100 dogs, pit bulls, and foster, over 100. Mm-hmm. That's how committed he is. That's how many volunteers he has. He had that many. Pits are his life. That's his life. Okay. Hands down. That's why you always see him putting up, you know, fundraisers to he's is about as legit as you can get. No questions about it. He's legit as you can get.
Let's call that out. That's Jason Flat, Friends of the Forlorn. Anybody out there who wants to know about people doing great work in the pit bull rescue space, there's somebody to look up and support. And also, John, if you can come over to Maui to visit, I would love to host you here. There's an amazing property here called Maui Pit Bull Rescue. And they've got 5 acres. They, too, have about 100 pit bulls at any given time under their charge. It's a couple, Gina and Kavika Weaver, doing everything they can, man, to keep this place open and take care of these dogs day after day. And I just I like to give props to people like that.
Oh yeah, man. I was telling my son, I need to go to Hawaii, and that's one. This is the only state I've never been to. And I mentioned you, and I was like, I'm going to Maui because I thought about going there permanently as well one time. And now I have a place to crash, so I'm down.
Yes, you do. You've got a 3-bedroom house here. 2 rooms are open. You'll probably be sharing a bed with one of my pit bulls, but that's how it goes.
I'm just gonna say, I said, as long as I have a pit with me in my room, I'm good.
Yes, we can arrange that. We most certainly can arrange that. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Go ahead. I was going to throw back to John Paul Zarowski, our producer, because he watches these things very intently and he comes up with questions that I don't. So I was going to see if John had anything for us. So while he's coming back on, I interrupted you, Johnny O. So please.
No, I just, you know, I mentioned to you earlier today about, you know, the trust of certain rescues, and because there's a lot of bad ones out there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of bad ones, more than you think. And ones that you may think that are really good are really not. The ones who are struggling are the ones that you have to focus on. And as you mentioned earlier, the ones who are doing fosters are trying to do the best that they can do. And everybody that does that, that really tries hard and struggles with that, I love them because that's a true heartfelt, they mean it. The problem with 501c3s is that they're very easy to get. And people realize how much of a cash cow it becomes. It's so easy to get money, you know? And a lot of people may start meaning well in doing it, but they realize how easy it is to make money with it, that they become, that's when they kind of cross the other side, and then it becomes more about greed and money and less about the animals. And then other ones suffer because of that, because when once they get busted, because they're going to get caught, then you hesitate about donating to somebody else because of what you already witnessed. And that's the biggest problem, especially the big ones and the real big ones. And I can go into that real deep if you want. But
we all know about the ASPCA and the chief executives, like $5 million annual salary, which is just absurd. And these are the same people that put these sad Sarah McLachlan commercials on TV to
Well, so, listen,
I'm with you, but I have to say, man, there's people out there also like Shauna Bell, also somebody you should also meet one day. God willing, she stays with us on this planet. She's a 60 plus year old woman on 10 acres in El Dorado Springs, Missouri, like the armpit of the U.S. She lives on this property with her like 95-year-old father, who's like the meanest old guy you've ever met on this planet. God bless Sean for putting up with him. She's got about 150 pit bulls there. And I stayed with Sean for, I think, 4 or 5 months a few years back. I was there in the dead of the winter when it is ugly and freezing out there. And I would get up, you know, at dawn, look out my window, and there'd be Sean, who in her mid-60s is frail, can barely walk. And she is like bundled up and humping across this property, feeding these 150 dogs, man. She's a 501c3. I mean, you know, there are benefits to having that distinction.
Of course.
But there's a lady whose heart is in the right place, man. And I look at places like that, and I wish I could help them all, John, but I would need to have the money to do that.
It's hard. I'm looking at the next generation because we're older, and I know I've been doing this a very long time, and you kind of got into it later in life, but my I'm looking at the next generation, which I mean like the guys in their 30s, their 20s, 30s, and so forth. And there's one particular guy I've been watching who I'm getting to know pretty well is Ty from Reverse Rescue, and he just built a 10-acre ranch of, and he constantly goes to the kill shelters to pull dogs. And he's doing this by himself, maybe one other guy. And it's 10 acres, about maybe 30 miles outside of L.A., like north a little bit. And it looks like a country club, what this guy's done. He's actually building a separate house for senior dogs or hospice dogs that they'll die there. And on top of that, if he can't get them adopted, he actually adopts them when he knows that they're going to die. So because he doesn't want them to be known as a shelter dog or a ranch dog, they want to know that they actually had a family. And he does, and he has a list of things to do with them, like get them their favorite, you know, treats and their favorite beaches and like all these things before they pass on, you know?
Well, that is awesome. What's it called, Joe?
Reverse Rescue.
Okay.
Ty.
Okay.
And Ty is a great guy. He's a young kid. And he goes on Instagram Live all the time. It goes on his Facebook stuff. And it's just amazing. And I'm going to be going out there, hopefully, to see what he's really doing. And the guy, Rocky does that bakery, pet bakery, whatever it is. Rocky, a lot of people know him. He's actually been helping him also. So he's pretty well known as well. But the next generation, like that is what I love to see. He actually, he'll film going to Downey Animal Shelter Carlson. They'll go there telling that this dog was a biter and they were going to put him down. He goes, I'll take him. And then meanwhile, the dog is jumping around like crazy in his car, licking him and everything else. That's what they do. They stereotype these pits. Oh, he's a biter. Got to put him down. You know, he's a biter. You got to put him down. Really? Come on. You know, so that's what they're doing. You know, that the top 10 dogs on record, the top 10 dogs on record for biting.
Oh, I can tell you what they are. Yeah,
no,
go ahead.
No, the top 10 dogs on record for biting, the pits are 25. Okay.
Oh, I've seen studies, John, where they're a lot farther down the list than 25, actually.
Right.
So, yes, I mean, that's a huge misconception.
The number one dog for biting is a Dachshund. You know, number two is a Chihuahua. Number three is a Dalmatian and Dalmatian and Golden Retriever. And the
retrievers
only other
are always up high. Yep.
And the only other dog that's on the top 10 is German Shepherd, which was number 9. The rest were like you know, the Yorkies, and the ankle biters. You know, the ankle biters.
That's right. Yep.
But you
don't read about them in the paper because you don't read Pomeranian goes on a rampage.
Right.
I understand.
What does that say?
Did you see the movie? I'm sure. That's exactly right. Have you seen the documentary, The Champions? I'm sure you have.
Bits and pieces. I never really have time to sit down and watch things, but I got to start.
You know, it's a pretty amazing piece of filmmaking. Darcy Dennett, who's a friend of mine, directed the movie, and it's about the dogs that were taken out of the Michael Vick compound when that idiot was shut down. And they took, I think, 50 dogs out. And at the end of the production period of The Champions, about 35 of these dogs, you know, these incorrigible dogs who could never be rehabilitated, about 35 of the 50 had been adopted out to loving families and were just great family pets. Listen, and it's an amazing thing to watch for people that have the misconception of the breed that you and I love so much.
Right. And Michael Vick, I'm not going to get into it. I saw the transcripts personally, so I know exactly what happened. But the thing is that the reason why the dogs got adopted, and I'm not putting anything against your friend, the reason why the dogs were so easy to adopt is because they were probably one of the worst dog fighters out there. They weren't like the extreme dog fighter type of dogs. They weren't trained as intense. I'm not saying she didn't do a good job. All I'm saying is that, and I'm not the one saying this, many others said the same thing. They were easy to rehab and get them out there. They weren't as bad as people may think they were. That's all I'm saying.
No, and that's fine. That's fine. I'm gonna debate you for a second. I'm going to interject. That's fine.
Yeah, sure,
that's
sure.
All well and good. I think the point that I like to make about that is they were fighting pit bulls, no matter if they were vicious fighters or not. And right. The perception was, this is a dog fighting pit bull, therefore it's vicious, no matter how nasty it was or not. You can never do anything with this dog other than euthanize it. And that that was proven to be so wrong.
Right. No. You're 100% right. I'm just saying is that my Chuck, who passed away in March, he was a fighting dog. And he threw him in the garbage because he didn't know how to fight. But they were training him to. And I took him and he became a service dog.
Yeah.
You know? So it's really, it's just people just have a bad, mentality. And what, if it's in the wrong hands, any dog in the wrong hands, it may not be, could bite you. So,
just like any person growing up in the wrong environment.
Exactly. But you know what? Exactly.
Everybody, we all have a second chance, don't we? Or most of us in any case, or we can. Well,
we hope that, if you get a second chance in life, make it work, make it happen.
Well, I think those are words of wisdom and words to live by. John Pozorowski, do you have anything? We're getting close to the top of the hour. I don't want to keep Johnny O too long. I know he's a busy man. Is there anything you would like to share with us? Thoughts-wise, questions? What do you have, my friend?
I was just going to make a comment. He's a very busy man, not just a pit bull rescue. He's doing all this other stuff too, anti-bullying, consulting. I'm just very impressed by the resume.
You could go to my website. He can go to my website and check out what I'm doing, which is my name, johnorlandini.com. So you can get a better understanding of who I am. You'll even see a TV thing I did with Jane Velez Mitchell. I did Lunch Break Live with her. So a cooking show. So, it's all about, like I said, listen. And Rick, I got all the time in the world for you, so don't worry about it. Unless you got to get out of here,
I want to have asked John P. if you'll put Johnny O's website up across the crawl on the bottom while we're still on. I know how to spell his last name. Everybody else out there may not. It's John Orlandini, ORLANDINI.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, dude. I've always admired you. I know that. You and I have almost, there we go right there, across the bottom, johnorlandini.com.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you.
I've always admired you. We've almost touched base numerous times throughout the years. I'm glad we've gotten to do this now. And yeah. I hope it's the first of many, my friend, my new friend.
Yeah, I know that you mentioned the Missouri thing. I know you called me about that. You wanted me out there. I forgot what I was doing at the time, but I'm sure I was doing something. But otherwise, I would have went out there. I think that there's a lot we could talk about more, maybe another time. But it's on my website. If everybody does a little, it becomes a lot, And that's really the God's honest truth too. You just have to. People can't be afraid to do something. or be a voice or see something or, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't mean you have to be so aggressive where you have to make that change or you have to do it right away. Just do something. Something is better than nothing. My mom used to say, my dad, what was it? Something is better than nothing. So if you could do something positive, you have to understand there's so much hate in this world. There's so much negativity in this world. And people that you thought you were friends and you probably weren't, and as soon as you have a different discussion about something and disagreement, all of a sudden you're banned. You're done. I mean, whatever happened to normal conversations? Whatever happened? You know, we could disagree about a lot of things. Whatever happened to normal conversations? You know, it doesn't exist anymore. So just if everyone does a little, people out there, if everyone does a little, it becomes a lot. If you want to help volunteer at a homeless shelter, if you want to help at a shelter, animal shelter, you know, be a dog walker, be a dishwasher in the shelter, whatever it is, you're helping them out. Believe me, my son still works at the animal shelter full time. And you just, I go there and pick them up sometimes, and they're always shorthanded with something. You just have to help out, volunteer. If you don't want to, if you do it once a month, if you do it twice a month, if you do it every day, it gives you some. It's not about feeling good that you did something. It's more about what's needed. The feeling good part will come automatically. That's just part of your internal energy. But if you do it, you're doing it because they need help. And then after you're done, you can leave and say, boy, I felt good today. I did something. You know, that's when you feel that positive energy. You know what I'm saying?
No, John, I totally know. And I'm really glad you brought that up, because a question I often ask at the end, and I may have forgotten this time, was for people out there that want to do something positive, because, you know, people will listen to this. They'll be inspired by you. And then they'll go on to the next thing on social media, and not really, most people aren't self-starters. I'm not indicting humanity. They just don't know how to take that first step. So right. I oftentimes will ask, what's a first step you can take? I mean, a simple thing I tell people is this: just be nice to the next five people you come across and see where that brings you. And yeah, it's amazing what it can bring. And I love what you said. I don't know anybody who doesn't love animals. Everybody out there, no matter where you live, there's a nonprofit or an animal rescue in your area that needs help. Look it up. Yeah. Go get your hands dirty. Pick up some poop. I've done it. Johnny Doe's done it. It's not a big deal. You know, I got to do this. I want to say hi to someone that's watching us. I know you're an MMA fan, Johnny. I don't know.
God, I'm a huge. You and I gotta go. You gotta take me to the UFC fights, dude. Man, come on.
No, I will. But are you a pro wrestling fan? I don't know if you're.
Absolutely. I can tell you more about pro wrestling. And listen.
We have an old friend of mine watching right now by the name of Ian Hodgkinson, otherwise known as the absolute legendary Vampiro. So I want to give a shout out to Vampiro, and dude, I'm almost tempted to bring him into the room. But
I want to say something about the WWE real quick. Everybody's talking about this virus. I'm not going to get into the virus thing, right? And the first professional sports that actually started doing it was the UFC, supposedly, okay? But they weren't the first ones. You know what the first ones were? WWE. I have Monday Night Raw and SmackDown on Fridays. They were doing it long before the UFC started. You know, smacking each other, flipping each other, sweating on each other, breathing on each other in their little studio in Orlando. So I just want to put it out there. I'm not going to get into the political part, Rick. You know,
we know this, man.
WWE, and people forget this, Vince McMahon. You know who his wife is? Linda McMahon. Let me see. She was the senator of Connecticut, right? Oh, yeah.
I'll get too political here, but okay. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm just saying, you know, they've been doing the wrestling long before the UFC came out to start saying, now we got professional sports. That's all I'm saying.
A lot of people in WWE last week were diagnosed with COVID-19. So what goes around comes around. I love Vince McMahon and I hate Vince McMahon. We've had a love and hate relationship for years. I have to tell you this, all in all, I appreciate them, admire them, and I hope they find their way through it. That's what I want to say.
What's the other one? AEW is the other one now, and you got the Impact.
There's almost always an other one. And that means someone who comes along that actually has a real business plan, that has backing, and that might have a chance to take a piece of the business. AEW is that one right now. John Pozorowski, get your ass on here, man. This is your area of expertise. please.
Hey, listen, John, when I had
John's forgotten more about pro wrestling than I'll ever know.
When I had the RI show, I was so hoping that I could be a guest spot on Monday Night Raw and do something, you know, because when we were at the height of that show and just come out there, like maybe somebody could be an animal, you know, whatever, something, you know, and one of the big guys could like throw me on top of the guy or something. I was like, because when I see a guy 6'6" jumping off the top of a rope doing a backflip, I'm like, holy crap. Okay. I mean, people don't get it. And yes, people, they do get hurt. Okay. They do get hurt. So it's
let's not even open that can of worms. We'll be on this all night long. But you are right. That's a discussion for another day. Hey, John P. Vampiro is watching us right now, and I think we should extend an invitation to Ian while he's watching to be on the show sometime soon. Fascinating individual.
That would be awesome.
Johnny O, you and Vampiro would get on good, man. That would be interesting. Man.
I watch wrestling every week. You got it out there, people. I watch Monday Night Raw. I go out there and I watch. Even now in their little Orlando, you know, studio, I still watch it.
Good, good. I'm glad that you support the industry. That's beautiful. Dude, it was really good having you on.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be out Port Hueneme way in a few weeks, so I'm going to make a point to look you up. And I hope we get a chance to get together. I'll bring you by a taping for United Wrestling. And nice to do that.
Yeah, man. I appreciate this. I always do. You know, we like you said, we have the same mindset, you know, so. We'll definitely get together in Ventura or, you know, Oxnard, wherever. We'll go somewhere, you know, Calabasas on somewhere. You're
a good man, Antonio. Thank you for your time today, brother.
Peace out, man. Thank you.
See you soon.
All right. Take care.
And John Pozorowski, that is it for the day, my friend. You know what? Only because we're playing with technology, if you don't mind, I would love to invite Vampiro into the room for a minute. I don't know if Ian wants to do this or not, but I'm going to hit this button here, see if he comes in. We can say hi real quick and maybe set up a future episode. What do you think of that idea?
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Let's see if it works. Ian, we're trying to add you to this room. Let's see if this works. He might be in Mexico. I know he's planning on moving out to California soon. It says, I don't think it's, you know, it's just more technology for us, but we're going to find out. John Orlandini, man, cool guy.
Very cool. A lot of personality.
Man, a lot going on. Yeah. Huge personality, man. Pretty rare that I feel out personality, but today was one of those rare occasions for sure. I was really glad to have him on. I'm glad that worked out. And I know that would be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Yeah, absolutely.
So trying to bring Vampiro in. You know me and technology. It's not working for my side, but that's something you and I should figure out later. It'd be cool to bring some of our viewers on occasion to say hello. Yep. And I know you'll figure that out because you're really good at that stuff, unlike myself. John Pozorowski of the Two-Man Power Trip. I want to express my gratitude to you as always for making this happen. You are very much appreciated, my friend. I want to thank John Orlandini, Johnny O, for coming on. You can learn more about him at johnorlandini.com. And everybody out there, thanks for supporting Talking Tough. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. If we can help one person, even one time, then we're doing our job. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, now go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.